Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello and welcome to Hardcore Listing Podcast.
That's it. That's correct.
Thank you. I'm Stuart Roy Whiffin.
Correct.
And you are?
No, this is me testing you. What's
my name? You're Christopher William Glass.
That's bang on, mate. Bang on. As on my birth certificate.
Yeah.
That you borrowed the other day. What was that for?
I've left my wife and I've found a new wife who's been emailing me from overseas.
Oh.
And she's basically, to kind of solidify just how much we're quite tight, I've currently sent them my birth certificate, my driving licence, a couple of my credit cards.
Is this why you also asked for my mother's maiden name?
and a kidney.
Good luck to you, mate. Good luck
Thanks,
to you.
Man. I can see it work. I mean, I'm not met her yet, but
no,
the emails, she seems lovely.
Yeah, yeah.
I think this could be the one. Okay, so before we get on with anything, we should thank our two sponsors.
I think we should thank ourselves first and foremost, mate, really. We're the ones who made this happen.
Truly are the best ones.
And we do have sponsors, I guess. Yeah. Who's your favourite today?
Luke. Yeah.
Yeah, he's good, isn't he? Good lad.
Yeah.
Luke Bang Boom Creative. Thank you very much.
I reckon if you spent the night having a little cuddle in bed with Luke.
Yes, sure.
Compared to having a little cuddle in bed with Charles.
Yeah.
I reckon Charles would want to lay in. I reckon Luke would get up and he'd make you a bit of breakfast.
Yeah, I think so. You'd get it on a tray, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you'd get like a nice coffee as well.
Not like what you've served up for me today, I'll just say.
Rude.
Just messing. It's very nice.
So, yeah, thanks to Love Beer and Bang Boom Creative. Mm-hmm. Our long-term sponsors.
Yes, and thank you to 76, our producer.
Yep, thank you to him. And
the whole Distraction Pieces ruddy network as well, while we're at it. They're all nice, aren't they?
Want to list them? We ain't done that for a while, have we?
Oh, Tuesday night draw. Ganja hit. Tuesday night draw.
Say Why to Drugs with Dr. Susie Gage, who has a book out. Oh, so when you get your book tokens this Christmas, go and buy Dr. Susie Gage's Say Why to Drugs book.
Interestingly, I got an advanced preview of that last night. I had a little leaf through it. It's bloody good. So, yeah.
Well done.
Yeah. It's all joined up writing in the book. So that's how you know I've looked at it.
Super sexy, handsome Brett Goldstein's films to be buried with.
Yes.
Not quite so handsome Dan Lesac's Falling Forwards.
Yep.
Scroobius Pip, he's got one, hasn't he?
Dan's been on fire on the WhatsApp. He's been making me lol a lot on our Distraction Pieces WhatsApp group recently.
Jason?
Jason, yes, with Stop and Search.
Yeah, Mr. Jason Reed.
Absolute ledge.
And
Pips and ours, and that's it, right?
Yeah, that's it. It's a drunken soiree in the Within. Chris and Stu present Hardcore Listing, the podcast. Okay. Would you like to introduce today's guest, Christopher?
Today's guest is Disraeli.
Hiya.
Hiya, mate. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks very much for having me. You're very good at this, aren't you guys?
Are we?
You're like flowing river of wit.
When you say that, do you mean that when you arrived today, we was just a couple of miseries just staring at our shows, and the minute I pressed record, we were like, and action! passion. Let's go. Let's turn on the podcast personality.
You tell a lie. You're like this entirely all the time.
It's like someone put a pound in us both, basically. Yeah. We sparked up.
We both, sort of, we read this earlier, we both come out of our separate dressing rooms, didn't we? You can't share a dressing room anymore.
When we've watched other people record or been on other people's podcasts, mate, people are a lot more prepared than us. So we never know quite what's coming out of our mouths.
That's very good. That's my life. Yeah. That's my life.
It's, I mean, the one thing I've learned from doing this for a couple of years, I mean, I've not mastered it, you're nowhere near it, is sometimes it's good to consider what you say.
Yeah. But that's what editing's for. but generally also, we've not edited much. So I was talking to Israel about, you know, the whole process on the way up here and how it all came about. And it's just great that it's conversational, isn't it?
You absolutely can
just ramble along and meander through a top five and along that way talk about other bits and pieces and, you know, all end up in the hot tub in the back garden at the end of it. So that's the plan for today, right?
Good. Yes. Good. Good.
Would you like to tell us what your top five is going to be?
My top five today is my top five things that stop me going mad.
Are you on the edge of madness then?
Yes, I am. And I think that we are collectively as a society pretty much on the edge of madness. And that can be both a very good and very bad thing. Mm. I think there's good ways to go mad. And I think there's very bad ways to go mad. And, you know, madness is just what's outside of our normal controlled consensus, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And you know, I'm someone that I've had some struggles with my internal world in the past. I've had some mental health kind of wobbles. So it's something I've thought about a lot. So it's really the first thing that came to mind was just, this is the list I've given most time to in my life. So.
It's a really good top five, and you're in quite good company with that sort of subject as well. Did you have any other considerations for top fives before you started that one? Was there?
I guess it would be music.
Yeah.
Top five hip hop albums. Top five novels. I love novels. I read a lot of novels.
Cool.
But this is the one for me, man. This is the one.
Well, before
got a very creaky chair.
It is a creaky
Shall
chair.
Shall we switch it? Let's switch to this one. Yeah, go on. Pop your bot on that one, mate. And
so before we get started, for people that may not be aware of your work, do you want to explain a little bit about what you do as an artist?
I do. Well, I'm primarily, I guess, a rapper and songwriter and musician. I play quite a few different instruments and compose music that I then put words over the top of in the form of song or rap.
All the things you're not capable of, Stu.
Sure.
Basically, mate.
Sure.
All where you fell short with your music.
Talent.
Right. Yeah, yeah. That's right. You've nailed it.
You've got a hot tub.
You've got a hot tub.
Winner.
Fair enough.
I haven't got a hot tub.
So. The day that installed, my dad come around and just held me and said, "Son, you've done it." He just held me, and I was like in the fetal position. He just cradled me, and we just cried. It was beautiful. Oh. They're actually our tears that filled that hot tub.
It's funny how we find that funny, isn't it?
Really?
let's look into that.
Bathing in tears. Yeah. Well, it's strange you said about, like, you know, the subject of madness and going crazy, and what we find is what are societal norms, because if that was a societal norm, you wouldn't think twice about it, would you? It's only because we've obviously found that it's quite a difficult production process to fill a hot tub with tears, I imagine. Or else we would probably do it and be like, obviously.
Yeah. Exactly.
Now, on a real level, though, like I cried with my dad last summer for the first time in my life. And it was mad. I was like, it was his mum, who's now, I mean, she's obviously my grandma. She's now 102.
Wow.
And the doctors said that she was going to die. She had 3 days to live. So the whole family gathered at her bedside in Suffolk, and we all kind of said goodbye, you know. And it was a really big moment. And I had to go back to London and do a gig, which is obviously more important than being at the bedside of the matriarch of my family.
Someone wants so a hot tub.
So obviously had to go. But yeah, I had a cry with my dad, and it was just, it was a mad moment. It was like, something felt so like transcendental and otherworldly about it. I don't know about you guys, but it's just not something that can conceivably happen, really.
Had you seen your dad cry before?
Yeah, a couple of times. Once when his auntie died, like in the 90s. No, a couple of times, yeah, a couple of times. But I feel like there's a difference between... Yeah, I don't know, the thing of sharing it and both crying, do you know what I mean? At the same time, and, you know, we had a hug and...
It's a very... God, it's at your most exposed and intimate, isn't it, crying? I think, in a way.
It's
like, because
so
you've collapsed.
Good.
It's so good to cry.
I'm rubbish at it.
Yeah.
I'm becoming much better.
Yes.
The last couple of years, I've been working on my cry.
But my crying is strange because it's like I'll break very quickly and then I'll stop before... as quick.
Yeah, strange.
And I do it a lot of the time. This can sound really sad, but I'll be on my own. I'll think of something that's, you know, recent tragedy, and then I'll cry, and then I'll be like, oh, and I don't know what makes me dry up so quickly instead of I try my best to encourage it out. And if I do cry, my girlfriend's there, I do find that holding her, I can cry for longer.
Yeah, same.
And it feels better.
Yeah, yeah.
To do that instead of this, I don't know what it is that makes me just seize up and stop. And I'm like, no, I'm still pretty sad here. Come on.
But we do know what it is, really, don't we? It's like there's like all the policemen at the gates in the form of all the men we've ever hung out with and all the boys who've ever told us to stop being a
wimp,
wet blouse,
definitely.
Or whatever,
to do that with your dad. Is quite an interesting
thing. It was just next level, man.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. And I'm lucky that I've got a dad that I can, you know, that I can do that with. That's,
yeah, absolutely.
That's a blessing, man. Yeah. That's a blessing. But yeah, it felt like fucking kicking down, you know, the wrought iron gates at the door of the castle.
Yeah.
And then fucking, do you know what I mean, man? Drinking the moat and puking it out. I don't know how far to pursue this. And another thing as well, I'm bisexual, and the first time I hooked up with a guy was about 10 years ago. And that was like, obviously if you're not interested in snogging men, then, you know, I can't recommend that you go and snog a man, because if it's not your thing, it's not your thing.
Yeah.
But that was a crazy defiance, man. That was like... It was just crazy exhilarating. It was like simultaneously terrifying because you had all those men at the gates, like rattling the gates, going, fuck you, fucker.
Yeah.
You're dirty, you're disgusting, you're less than a man. Yeah. And simultaneously the defiance of that,
like,
in spite of them, I'm going to fucking do this.
Yeah.
And it was wild, man.
Did that feel like a release in terms of sort of like, because of pent up... feelings that you sort of suppress? And it's interesting because this all ties in with, you know, your top five, that you can hold back things because there's something in you telling you something, but you're not paying attention to it,
or you're paying all the attention to it but in the worst possible way. So the attention you're paying to it is about judgment and self-hatred, and which is what it was for me. And actually, like, it's like Carl Jung says, if you sublimate or suppress like a fundamental desire or need, then it won't disappear. Like, energy doesn't disappear, it just comes back as something else, and what it will come back as is poison.
Yes,
you know. And if that's why, like, it's so important to have open conversations about you know, sexuality and gender and self-image and all that sort of stuff, because it will just come back as poison.
Yeah,
it might come back as a civil war, you know, it might come back as violence, it might come back as homophobia itself.
Yes.
And if you're on the receiving end of prejudice, you will begin to believe it, and it will become self-hatred.
Yeah.
And what does self-hatred come back out as is, you know, is violence, basically. Yeah. So it's like there's so many reasons to talk, and there's so many reasons to find peace with your you know, your fundamental self, whether it's to do with your sexuality or you know, whatever. You know.
There was back when I used to put on the first few live music bits and pieces that I used to do, I used to just book different artists and also put to release like a little CD of all the musicians, and on the first one, at the very end of it, was a tune called The Pearl of Great Price, and it was insane. It was this 20-minute sort of like whirling song where the writer was talking about all the weird, strange, conscious and subconscious babblings that your brain talks about, and it was coming from a bloke's perspective, and it was sort of like saying, you know, it was quite crude in many ways. It's like, oh, you're fucking this bird, but you've got no reason. Why are you fucking her? You're not happy. It'll be a laugh. I guess you can tell your mates that you're doing it. And it was all these other weird things to do with your life and doing things that you think you're supposed to be doing because of what everyone else has been saying to you. But the conclusion of The Pearl of the Great Price, which is the name of the song, is that there's something saying things to you in your head that you've got to learn to listen to, because if you ignore them, it's ultimately going to lead to these strange behaviours, and it can come out in so many different ways, but it's toxic. But it ends with talking about what is the pearl of great price. Well, the pearl of great price, if you listen to it and listen to yourself, it's you, and that's what you've always got to do, because ultimately you'll be very sad. And so one of the things when you said about this top five, for me, weirdly, this strange 20-minute long song from this great guy who showed up in a wizard's outfit when we were doing a live show, that was really interesting to me. And it's easy, because you can know that as a good advice. It's different to act on it.
Yeah,
and I knew that at 23, and yet you will go, I know what the theory is. I can't always put this into practice.
Yeah, I was very wise when I was 23, man. I just didn't do any of it. You know? I could talk a really good talk. Yeah. And I wrote songs about everything that everyone else should do, according to me. And turns out it's
difficult to walk the walk, isn't it?
There's a wobbly tower of nonsense.
Well, let's start working through your list.
Yeah, let's do it.
Number five,
eating.
Yeah.
Really simple. I am a miserable fuck when I have not eaten enough food, and when I've eaten bad food, I'm starting to realise I've got a bit of a junk food. What's the word? I've got a bit of a penchant for junk food.
What in particular can you shout any out now?
Anything with melted cheese on, really, man. So cheesy chips, loaded cheesy chips, nachos. Flipping. I know that all the vegans are going to hate on me for saying this, but this is like a bag, breakfast snack vans that you get in industrial estates.
Yes.
Those kind of outlets.
Like an entire breakfast in a loaf, basically.
In a baguette.
Do you know what? There's a million and one burger joints, hot dog joints in London that are probably amazing. Just getting something that's put together in a van down a really fucking dusty road on an industrial estate.
Yeah.
Where someone would go, do you want a fried egg in that? Fucking yes, I do. Yes, I do. What, with cheese? That can't work. Oh, it does.
Yeah. Baked beans? Yeah. Sure. Let's put
throw it all in there.
Yeah. Is it like because it's the absence of anything else around?
But it's also just delicious. It's like stodgy deliciousness, isn't it?
Yeah. It's all the carbs.
Brown sauce.
It?
Yes. Yeah. It's pepper. Yeah. From the ground pepper that's from the, you know.
Completely. Yeah. It's the dirty strip club of fast food. You're not going in a nice restaurant. You're doing something that you think, I hope no one sees me in this. But I need it now. I'm going in.
That's a whole other podcast.
It's so interesting, though. But again, we were talking about refined sugar before we started. And again, the things that I'm reading more now is the communication between your gut and your brain.
Yeah, the second brain.
And it is. And like, so...
Gut is the second brain.
So my girlfriend has suffered from, had a really rough time with health over the years. And one of the very first things that they were saying is you've got to get your stomach right. And so she was using probiotics and stuff like that and kombucha.
Did it help her?
Yeah. And weirdly, we did at the start of the month, we were like, okay, we need to sort of like, you don't always have to be on it, but to sort of like re-kick your sort of like digestive health, we did a run of like kombucha, and it does affect. Like I'm so much more clear thinking now. So right. I've cut out wheat again, and I'm not really having sugar. And it's weird because I'm having a bit of a I've had a bit of dairy in that, but normally now I'm not really touching dairy, and I feel mentally happier and more alert. And so all these connections, like you say, the second brain, it's so important. Mm. You wouldn't fill up a unleaded car with diesel petrol. And it's the simplest way of looking at it.
I've done that once.
Yeah.
I have. It's very expensive.
It's super expensive. My dad did it, and it was all my fault. I remember the car grinding to a halt. And my dad going, "This is because I was shouting at you." And I'm like, "Hold on, I feel like I'm getting double told off here."
I done it the other way round. I put unleaded in a diesel.
That's less bad, isn't it?
It's less bad.
Yeah.
But I just before I realised it was less bad, I was rushing and literally filled it up and then decided to then go across the Thurrock Bridge. And so when you go across the Dartford Crossing, whatever you want to call it, it's a big bridge, right?
Mm-hmm.
And halfway across, my car started sort of stuttering and I was thinking, oh, fucking hell. Mm. And then my third brain just went, you prick. You know what you've done. And then my main brain just went, oh, yes. Like, best I do an exit of the first opportunity on the M25 and try and get back across the bridge and back to where I am.
Did you do it?
I did, yeah. Wow. But they reckon, the fucking boring fact for anyone that's ever done this.
There's people moving on to the next podcast. I was looking forward to that Disraeli one.
Because there was still a little bit of diesel in there, if it was completely empty and I would have put unleaded in, it would have fucked it. But there was enough left. Yeah, there you go.
To unfuck.
So, yeah, that's your body, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what, going back to food, if you eat a load of shit food, you do get that split second of like, yeah, that was amazing. Ooh. But then
it's normally at the mouth stage rather than the stomach stage, isn't
completely.
It? Once it reaches your intestines and it's sort of sitting there like a greasy octopus.
Yeah.
Like extending into your being.
Yeah.
Then it's less gratifying. Definitely. Yeah.
And that reaction has got quicker and quicker as I've got older. Like the immediate regret of doing it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think it's a, you know, there's better choices out there for people, healthier choices out there. But if you was to go to, say, Basildon Town Centre, and you're like, oh, you find yourself hungry, you're in bandit territory because there's nothing there that's actually really kosher, other than there's a spud you like. Can I call out a company?
Right.
What
no, you,
like
you can't say that because that went into administration about 1984.
Is there a spud you like there?
I don't know.
I was going to say, I haven't seen one of them for a long time.
No, it's what Chris does. It's called guesswork. Fucking spud you like.
So there's a jacket potato
right,
company
there
in Food
we go,
Court,
there
which
we
is
go.
The only healthy option if you find yourself stuck in Basildon and hungry, and then they want to charge you above £5 for a jacket potato, and I can't allow myself to do that. So I'll try like the healthiest option on the McDonald's. I'll have a chicken select, and I'll eat that, and I'll be like, "Why the fuck did I do that?" Because immediately I just feel gross, and like you say, it's that immediate, it's that very brief reward because of the artificial sort of way they've gone about it. Well, completely artificial, but they've. You know, and then you feel like crap.
That delicious MSG.
MSG.
So why did you choose this as one of the things that keeps you sane? Like, is it something if you're feeling like you might be starting to feel low that you think, right, I need that instant gratification of something like that? Because I've had all sorts of weight issues and a bulimia for years, like when I was younger, and that was because food was my go-to,
right?
Like, I guess pillow, mm-hmm. you know, and then that instant—that's bad.
Mm.
Got to put it right. Got to get it out. Mm-hmm. So
that's what it was every time. It was like in the moment. It was. I'm just, sorry. This is a question.
Oh, okay.
In the moment, it was like you want comfort, so you go for the food.
Yeah.
And then immediately afterwards, disgust. It's like self-punishment, disgust, like eject it kind of thing. Completely. It wasn't like the whole thing was about self-punishment. It was like gratification, punishment, like that. Right.
Yeah.
So that's like an unhealthy way of because you were using it as a pillow. Mm. And then, as you say, there was the payoff that wasn't a positive experience for you.
No, not at all.
And I guess, Desiree, what you're saying is, have you learnt more now that actually a way of keeping yourself centred is having a smooth sort of like behaviour with your food and eating properly, and therefore you sort of like feel better as a smooth result? Behavior. I don't know. Yeah.
Smooth behaviour, man. Exactly. It's just like, I guess it's... One of the things that I've had to kind of learn in the past few years of like having some kind of mental health upsets and navigating my way through that is some of the stuff that I need in order to keep myself on an even keel is just really basic, like having slept enough, having eaten something. Yep. Do you know what I mean? It's like sometimes I'll have this like desperate sadness at the end of the day, and I'm just hungry.
Yeah.
And I think like that's certainly something I've had to learn myself, is just like look for the fundamental stuff first.
Yeah.
Once that's dealt with, now we can have a think. Do you know what I mean?
For sure, man.
Like, and before you fucking sit and have that think, just like deal with the fundamentals.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's why I put eating at number 5.
I agree. And a lot of the time when I've seen observed it in myself, is lack of consistency in my behaviour, and it's those peaks, lows, not managing my body as it needs to be, and then you can't really get anything else done. Mm. Yeah, for sure.
Peaks and lows.
Yeah.
Peaks and lows, buddy.
Peaks and Lows of Smooth Living is the debut album from Greasy Octopus.
It's
available.
Peaks
and Lows is the first one.
It's the
Greasy
new
Octopus is the second experimental.
That difficult second album. Like
the prog outing. Yeah.
From a new mega rap group, Disraeli, Chris and Stu.
Great. Number 4.
I found the order of it quite difficult to do for this list, but number 4 is meditation. It's a massive part of my life. I try and meditate every morning, and it's something I picked up back in 2016 when I did a mindfulness course at the London Mindfulness Project. Originally because my mind was a mess and was very, very noisy.
Yeah,
and I just found it. One of the things, I don't know about you guys, but I find clarity quite difficult.
Yeah,
to know what I want and to know what is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like either of those two things.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I find quite difficult. And with meditation, I find it 100 times easier. Just every detail of my life, I find much easier. So this could even be at number 1, really. But
how long do you meditate for?
At least 10 minutes, at most an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Generally about 20 minutes.
You do it every day now?
Yeah. But, well, it's like, it feels like a hiccup when I don't.
Yeah. I'm not in the habit of it now, and it annoys me because when I've done it and I've got into a green patch of being very, again, we go back to consistency, the difference is, it's a profound difference.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just like your diet. You can be eating really well and you can find yourself slipping into old behaviours that were ingrained in you as a child, the fast food culture that we had when we grew up, well, I did. And it's the same with meditation. I can slip out of it and I'm like, oh my God. Because like you said about how it quietens the mind, I have quite a butterfly mind myself. I find it very difficult to stay on a subject. And but meditating, I feel that, because there's a variety of different ones. What sort of meditation do you do, mate? Is there a sort of...
Well, as I say, I started with just mindfulness. Secular mindfulness, yeah, right. So which was initially drawn from the Buddhist practice. The guy, is it John Kabat-Zinn? John Kabat-Zinn, the guy who brought secular mindfulness into like popular awareness was a Buddhist himself, and he was working with people with chronic pain in hospital. And he introduced them to just the mindful part of his Buddhist practice, so not the kind of the ritual and like scriptural part, literally just the practice of paying attention. So my meditation is originally based in mindfulness, but I do go to a Buddhist school called Tri Ratna in the London Buddhist Centre in London.
Oh, yeah.
It's based on a school of Buddhism called Tri Ratna. And it's just really interesting. It basically just adds a lot of philosophy. The teachers that I have gone to see speak and stuff tend to talk of it as almost like a secular thing in itself. So it's not a faith, it's not a religion, it's a line of inquiry.
Mm-hmm.
So Buddhism is very much a part of my meditation practice, and I'll often read like a chapter of a book on Zen or something like that before I meditate, just to kind of put me in a more kind of spacious frame of mind. And it's that, like, for me, meditation is about space. Like, right, people have a conception that it's about like stilling your mind and like ceasing to think, and it's not that at all for me. And in terms of like the practice of mindfulness and Buddhism, it's not that either. It's like, it's learning to see what is there. Like, so rather than being like a manic participant in your mind, learning to sit at the side of it and see, right? So it's like, rather than running at high speed at all times, once you have a look, and also about giving space. It's like literally a good, I don't know how good this analogy is. I always get it out. people always like scratch their heads when I say it. But anyway, it's like a bee in a jam jar.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
Problem.
Makes sense. Yeah.
A bee in a cathedral.
Yeah.
Is not a problem.
Because you're not bouncing off the walls effectively.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the sense of like, you have a choice of what to do with your mind.
Yeah.
You can clench around what's happening inside it.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can learn to let go and give it space. Or like open out and give it space. If you give your thoughts space and what's happening inside your mind space, then they will tend to relax and not fucking bash their heads against the glass. And things will tend to like gain their own perspective. So it's not even teaching your mind tricks or like cleaning it, or it's just literally learning to sit, give it space and watch. And that's why meditation is so important to me, because it helps me to do, through doing a practice of it every day, it's allowed me to do the same with my life as well. And, I definitely haven't reached enlightenment here, guys. I'm not going to lie. Like, I still make really bad decisions and eat baguettes full of breakfast and all that. But it just definitely helps, man.
Yeah.
Like, a social situation, for example, I'm capable of getting very worried in social situations. Like, I worry that I have the wrong kind of demeanour or face or voice or presence in the room or whatever it is. And meditation really helps me to just go, step back and let this thing be, like, stop trying to control it, So yeah, meditation number four.
It's being here. It's a great shout. It's a great shout. Have you ever done much of it, buddy?
Carol used to
meditation.
A lot.
Let me just meditation. Oh. Let's not get.
Oh no! Right. No. I used to. I guess it's very similar, but I used to sort of be hypnotized regular, mm-hmm. and I guess that's a very sort of deep form of meditative state, isn't it?
I bet just, it has a lot of similarities. Yeah.
That was something that was probably the most relaxing thing I've ever done in my life. Mm. Like, because when they'd bring you round, they would bring you round to say you'd had the most like refreshing sleep you could ever want, and you come out of there feeling incredible. Mm.
Yeah.
And what context was that in? Was that a
why did I have hypnosis?
Yeah, it was like, was it a therapy thing?
Or, to a degree, it was. I used to get stage fright. And I was
pissing in cubicles. Are we talking about here?
No, but I was a singer in a band, and I used to get really bad stage fright. And so yeah, I went there to see, because it was my aunt that was a hypnotist, so it was good. It was free, and it was around the corner.
Yeah,
so I could go quite regular. And it was interesting. The more you go, the deeper you go, and the more you can kind of explore things. I can't recommend hypnosis enough.
Yeah.
And I'm not suggesting the hypnosis where, you know, you're on all fours barking like a dog eating an onion in front of a load of people.
That's the only hypnosis I've ever seen.
Yeah,
by eating an onion in a caravan camp.
Absolutely. Exactly that. It's meditation, you know. The way they used to sort of put me under was I had to just kind of picture somewhere really tranquil that is somewhere that I like to be, and then literally start counting down. I would always get to like 18, and I couldn't get lower than that. And I was
And could you access that state like after the fact? Could you go back to that?
To a degree, yeah. But I guess when you're in the hypnotic state, then your subconscious is rising, isn't it? So I guess the idea is to plant them seeds of you don't need to smoke cigarettes in your subconscious, so that sort of sparks throughout the day when your normal levels of consciousness rise again. But in regards to, I mean, it may well be placebo. I don't know.
I don't think it is.
I didn't lack confidence on stage, and felt totally fired up for it, and it worked a treat for me.
Yeah. To get going, because I've been hypnotized and done meditation, and because there's different ways that you can get pull yourself into like a trance or a meditative state, and they're pretty much very similar to how I've been hypnotized. And it is a means of either find yourself focusing on one thing or something in immense detail.
Was that
and
the
in
onion?
Doing that, that's the onion.
Yes.
And in doing that, all your thoughts bounding around your head, you stop paying attention to, because you're only looking at this one thing, and then therefore your mind starts to quieten, and then it can relax because it's not as stressed. But that's only one form, because there are other ways to sort of like do that. And coming back to your question, buddy, I found when I'm in my habit, when I'm doing it consistently, I can get myself there really quickly, and I can be on a train surrounded by busy people. It doesn't believe you laugh. I can be anywhere, and I can get myself to a very calm state. This is where Stu'll start courting.
Oh, mate,
he's got an image in his head, and
but
he can't.
When you said that, I can get myself there really quickly, even on public transport. I thought, oh, come on.
It is like you can just learn to quieten your mind quicker and quicker. And like you say, then when you can apply that into situations where I suffered from road rage, and it got to a point, I mean, Stu's been on the phone to me, hands-free, but Stu's been on the phone to me as I'm getting out of a car to start a conflict with someone, and it was disgraceful behaviour by me. There's nothing in that that I'm proud of. I'm utterly ashamed about it, even now. But I was going through a period of my life, and that was where it was coming out. Was like, I treat everyone with respect, and I try to be patient with everyone. But something happened when I got behind in my car, that the slightest infraction that someone didn't indicate, and I was like dynamite. I wanted to go crazy at them.
She couldn't even get out the wheelchair, could she? She was just going mental.
It was a zebra crossing, granted. But
I
definitely
totally relate to that, man. I'm a fucking idiot behind the wheel sometimes, I have to say. I don't respect myself in that situation.
I just think in situations like that, don't behave in a car
like you
any
would,
different.
No, definitely.
Like
not.
If you were walking down the street.
Completely, mate. Completely.
Because in a million years, if... You know, you get off the train and there's lots of people everywhere and someone bumps into you, the first thing you'll probably do, even if it isn't your fault, go, sorry, mate.
Yeah.
Whereas behind the wheel of a car, you're like,
And it's like, it's the same thing as being a keyboard warrior.
Yeah.
And it's not a classy aspect of your personality if you ever do that. It's your lower self. It's you giving in keyboard to impulse warrior. Behaviours.
Third album.
Exactly. By what was it? Greasy Octopus.
Greasy Octopus. No, Greasy Octopus was the second album.
Oh, that was the second album, wasn't it? Yeah, definitely. But meditation, going back and starting it again, that stopped my road rage. Honestly, within about a month, and I was like, I can't believe I've started to not be an absolute arsehole.
Yeah,
you know, it's great. So,
respect, man.
Great shout for number four, bud.
Yeah. And it's exactly that for me. It's like it's changing. Meditation is in the process of changing, like the landscape inside my head, and that's basically what it is. It's like before it was a flipping house party at 4 o'clock in the morning when a fight has broken out, and now it's, you know, a much more manageable room of voices and people. And so I'm really grateful to meditation, basically.
So many people. Even now when I talk about it, I see them dial out and they're just like, oh, here we go. Because they hadn't felt the benefits. And
they haven't tried.
Say, sometimes in life you have to just say, don't criticise it and don't have a presupposition on it until you've done it and felt the benefits. And it's not something that your first 4 weeks... Well, I felt benefits quite quickly, even when I first started. But it might not be your first week or two trying it that you're really going to start feeling it.
Yep.
But that... I remember being about 24 and doing it, and what was I reading? It was the Celestine Prophecy. You guys,
oh yeah.
So I was reading that, and so I was sort of like, I think I was dating a witch at the time, and that's not a derogatory term for a female. It's my girlfriend at the time.
Self-identified.
Yes, and. And I started getting to the habit of it, and I did this meditation in the woods near us in Basildon, and I had the most profound this gonna start straight up again. I had the most profound experience on it. I can't begin to tell you how it felt. It felt like no sensation I had before, beyond it, a physical one as well. I felt euphoric after completing it, and. I can't help it now, Stu. I keep slipping in innuendos. But yeah, no, it's a good shout, man. Very good.
Yeah.
Numero three,
exercise, really basic. In the same way that meditation is like learning how to be present in myself and my mind, exercise is basically about getting back to my body and like being present in my body. Even just the basic thing of like feeling an ache in a muscle for me brings me back to reality or back to the actual present moment rather than like corridors. My mind does corridors a lot. It's like, I'm running down the corridor. I'm running down another fucking corridor. Oh shit, there's four corridors I ought to be running down at once, you know. And exercise just, it brings me back to where I actually am. Oh, I'm sat in a room with some quite nice people, you know, it's great. And also, just buzzes. You know, I definitely have a bit of an addictive personality. I like the rush of endorphins. And so exercise,
It ties in so much, that does, exercise. Not only to what you were saying there with mindful behaviour and being in the present and not sort of doing these, like you say, these mental acrobatics in your head. You have the endorphin release, which makes you feel good. There's a degree of... I'm going to call it smugness, but like feeling good, because as much as we you know, as lofty as we can say our goals are as human beings and whatnot, there's I wouldn't say it's narcissism per se, but there is a degree of us somewhere along the line that thinks about our self appearance in a way, whether it's how you dress and whatnot.
Yeah.
But when you exercise and you can start seeing sort of like your body looking, presenting itself better, and I feel better and I'm aching, but that's a good feeling. There's a feel, to me, it rewards me knowing that I'm doing something good.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know if it is smugness, but it does something for my ego. Not beyond, not rampant. Like, I'm not in the gym staring at myself like pumping weights, but it does help. There's a
self-love.
It helps the ego. It does.
Self-love. In a
careful show.
Euphemistic sense. Yeah. But yeah, it's just that. It's just looking after yourself, isn't it? It's like if you were in a relationship with a human, you would, and that you loved them, and you would make sure you would have half an eye on what they ate, and if they hadn't ate anything healthy for 3 days, you'd be like, hey, let's make ourselves a really good lunch here. And if they weren't getting out of bed, you know, if they were like indulging in all kinds of habits that clearly were harmful to them. It's funny how much easier it is to care for someone else than it is to care for yourself, isn't it?
Yeah, because there is that mental uphill push that you've got to do to get yourself to change. Changing behaviour is difficult, but there is a trick to it. And if you read about it, you can sort of like learn, I know this part's going to be difficult, but I know that it makes it easier because I can challenge it in certain ways. But yeah, it is much easier to sort of tell people how to live their lives or what they should be soon, as opposed to actually, do you know what? I'm going to go and exercise.
Yeah.
But I was having a conversation with Pip about a similar subject this morning, but you don't rarely do exercise and not feel good about it, do you?
Even when you're exhausted, you just don't regret it.
And all those mental acrobatics you were doing are flushed out. I don't give a fuck about them anymore. I'm like, oh, that's it. I'm back in reality.
Yeah.
And I always wonder if it's like, if you look at sort of anthropology, look at human beings, we hundreds of thousands of years, our bodies have evolved to achieve certain things, whether it was running away from like predators, whether or not it was hunting or doing all these other building construction. Your body's designed like that. Your body is a billion pound. It is infinitely pressed. Whether or not you're Bill Gates or you're you without a penny in the bank, you have got something that's absolutely priceless. Mm. And we're always so obsessed with comparing our material gains. Where you've got this billion-pound body.
Yeah, man.
And if you're not using it, your body, it's like this pearl of great price we were talking about earlier, and these little things that's in your head. It's saying, use me, man.
Yeah.
You can break an arm. I'll just fucking repair. Yeah. I'm waterproof, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, yeah.
If you want to learn how to run 100 fucking miles, I can literally be trained to do that.
Yeah.
If you want to be able to pick up super heavy weights, do it and I can do it. But if you're procrastinating, I'm going to be miserable because you're not using me like I'm supposed to be being used. And I think there's all of that underneath it that it's simple as just saying, just run.
Yeah.
And some people just need to know that. I just run, I exercise, I'm fine. For me, I needed to know these psychological things that then help me live healthier and exercise.
It works the other way as well. Yeah, sometimes your body needs to rest.
Sure. You've been in a state of rest for four or 5 years now.
No, but as I've said before, like when I spar, that's meditative to me.
Yes.
Nothing else exists, only what's in front of me right at that very moment, and it's the most focused I can ever be, and I got the living shit beaten out of me last Sunday by a 5'9" 20-year-old which is very embarrassing, but I didn't think about anything, and I'm spinning a lot of plates these last couple of weeks with work, and it was fucking brilliant. I got home and I ate and I was sore and I just thought, do you know what, I feel so fucking good.
Yeah.
But then I just thought, you know what? I need to do this. I need to run down that corridor. But I know that, hang on a minute. I need to not do anything for a couple of hours. Yeah. I need to sit, watch, just shit.
Trash.
Yeah. Not even watching it.
Yeah.
But just kind of put my phone over on the table.
Yeah.
Don't look at anything on it.
Yeah.
And just relax.
Yeah.
because that's just as important.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you just burn yourself out.
You overload, for sure. For sure.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and that's something I've been thinking a lot about recently as well, is like, is exactly what you're saying about us being evolved to fulfill, so, like, us evolved to use our flipping bodies. We are fundamentally physical animals, you know, in the same way that flipping leopard or wolf is a physical animal. And as young men as well, like, well, we're not actually so young anymore, but as men as well, we have all this flipping testosterone, yeah, which is basically like action hormones. Yeah, yeah. Like, it's literally what it is. And this thing of like, yeah, having a flipping fight in a environment that's sort of controlled and not doing damage to anyone. It's like, yeah, legitimate, man. Like, I want to get into doing some fighting as well. I want to have some fights. Like, get back into martial arts or whatever it is. It's like, yeah. I feel the need for that. And I used to have a really judgmental thing about, like, oh, well, you know, people shouldn't be, like, boxing and doing all the kicking and stuff, because it's all it's doing is nourishing negative energies. And I think it's a really fundamental need, actually. Like, I want to go and have a wrestle.
Society has changed a lot quicker than what our bodies are. So testosterone serves a purpose. It served more of its purpose in centuries past. Like, we'd be swinging axes around, or, you know, because of human behavior, tribalistic behavior, whatever. It was kind of required for survival. But as we move into a reality where that isn't really as necessary for all of us, and the whole world is in flux. In some parts of the world, you probably, you know, that you maybe need to defend your family more than, say, what I do now. So it's how you use that testosterone. Where does that go, and how are you releasing it in a way that doesn't destroy you and your family? Stu's smiling again. He's got a little... But how do you use that in a positive way?
This is something that I've been doing a lot of men's work in the last 3 years. I go to a group that's run by someone from the Mankind Project, and I've also done a Mankind Project initiation in Ireland. A lot of what the kind of point of that work is to find out how to be a man, accept your manhood, embrace your manhood. In a way that is positive and constructive and can be, you know, empathic and loving and all that good stuff, as well as being like fierce and active and all the stuff that we can also see as positive, guys. You know what I mean?
Sure. You still need that. You still need that. But being brave and strong and using that they're all amazing qualities, and you can still use that.
Yeah,
that energy and that testosterone. But it's like you say, it's learning how to correctly apply it now.
Yeah, and how can we find ways of being men that isn't about bless you, that isn't about crushing other people, dominion, definitely. Domination, control. It's like, it doesn't have to be about that.
No, it doesn't.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the reason we've evolved this far as a species is because we are able to cooperate, not because we crush each other.
Yeah,
like our success as a species is about being able to work together, and as men we can work together.
Yeah.
And another thing I was going to say as well is, like, the place we're currently at as a society is that we have these quite static lives, and we do a lot of sitting on our bums, and our kind of action hormones aren't called for very much. But I sincerely believe that we are headed towards a period of society where that is not going to be the case. Our systems of food distribution, climate change, all that, like the kind of stability that we have now as a culture, as a society, is pretty flipping fragile, actually. Mm-hmm. And I really believe that we're going to need positive masculine energy, whether in the form of men or women, that knows itself and is able to apply itself intelligently in the coming decades, you know. So I think this work is really, really
definitely
important.
Apathy will crush us, and so we have to engage with that now, and it starts with conversation and then action, and we're starting to see that more. Whether or not we can turn that boat around now, I don't know. We could just I'm hopeful and not nihilistic in that sense, but
you mean
in
terms of climate change?
With everything, well, I think with even climate change, consumerism, our culture as it stands, I think we do hang on a knife edge of in many ways we're more there's more information out there for everyone. We can all be more enlightened, and yet in some ways society's moving into this sort of like consumer is king, narrow-minded product, and that's super dangerous, and that all piles into the climate change.
I think we're at a crossroads, aren't we, man? And in a sense, that's a really exciting place to be.
Yeah, definitely. Like,
may we live in interesting times, eh?
Yeah,
we certainly do.
Flipping do, and here we are. Here, like the choice is in our hands, and it's in our hands every moment of every day, and that's like both terrifying and really empowering as well. Yeah. I think.
Yeah, we can be remembered in history as a really good thing if we're the ones to start saying okay, I think things we're going down the wrong road here.
Yeah,
yeah.
Do you guys have kids?
I do. Yeah.
Do you? Yeah. How old are they?
16 and 14.
Oh man. Would you have kids now? Would you have kids now with the state of the world as it is now? Would you choose to have children still?
Yeah.
You would.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. I think, I don't think I'd even consider it. I think for all the things that are unpleasant in the world, there's equally as many things that are beautiful in the world. And I guess it's what you choose to pursue and, you know, and what you wish to do with your life. You know, the UK is a very strange place at the moment. I don't know where it's going to go
or how quickly. Is that sometimes your concern? Is because like I sometimes think I've interrupted, I'm really sorry, but I sometimes think about having kids and then I think, but is the world about to pop or is it not? Like, because I don't know the answer to that.
It's good to have young minds coming through though that
can, yeah,
you know, look at different perspectives and look at what, you know, they can bring to the table. Mm-hmm. So, you know. Number two.
We're there already, flipping out. Okay. Friendships, community. Just humans basically. Humans that I know and who know me. And I always have to like remind myself of this, how fundamental it is to me to stop me going crazy is that just having my mates around, like the mates I grew up with in Bristol. There is nothing like that connection that we have and that ease of just chatting. I went camping with three of my mates the other day, and we just camped in a little campsite in Sussex, and it was a beautiful place. It was full of like stunning nature, and we just sat around the fire and chatted absolute shit for 3 days, just like pure
amazing
dick jokes and just nonsense, like literal nonsense for three days.
A lovely distraction though.
Yeah, it was so good. I just like, oh, like in a sense nothing deep just happened for the last 3 days, but also in a sense like the deepest possible thing, which is just being known, belonging. So yeah, friendships, man. It's kind of as simple as that, really.
Do you find yourself, can you tend towards being a hermit?
I'm a weirdo. I'm like, I seem to have equal parts hermit and extrovert.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's a whole type, I'm sure. Yeah. But I can tend towards being a hermit. And that comes back to what my next thing on the list. Should we jump the gun?
Do it.
To that?
Go on.
The next thing on the list is music and making.
Yeah.
And the basic need I have to create. And that's like one of the things I've been struggling with this week, actually, is I have a really fundamental need to create. I need to write music. I need to write lyrics and poems and just feel like I am in the process of making. I think it's really fundamental to my being and all of our beings as humans, actually. But that is the exact thing that drives me into the cave, man.
Yeah.
I go into the making cave. And I emerge, and it's really typical on a Saturday when I'm not gigging. I emerge on Saturday morning and feel horribly lonely. I'm like, oh my God, I don't have any friends. Like no one's called me because they assume I'm not flipping available because I have not been available. So I have, I definitely have that the need to make and the need to be connected to people. I really need to find a way of like marrying those two and making in a way that is connected to people. And I don't know, I'm also a total control freak, so I really like doing everything myself in my music, and having my vision like completely borne out.
Yeah.
But that's very lonely as well. So yeah, man.
It's a that is a struggle, mate. You're a very sociable person, Stuart. You really don't get a lot of alone time, do you? Like, say, you might sometimes get a Sunday morning to yourself.
And that's other than my highlight of my week.
Yeah.
Sitting on that sofa before anyone's got up.
Yeah.
And I will get up early when I think I need some sleep. I will get up early and make myself a coffee and watch UFC. Mm-hmm. And it's just pure heaven.
Mm.
Pure heaven.
Especially when you know it's calling you Sunday morning. Oh, mate. I'll just show up at your sofa.
Pure Heaven, fourth album.
Like, yeah.
We are smashing through these records, guys.
I think that could be the greatest hits.
It's when we get into it's the ambient period.
Yeah.
And when we find God and get ambient.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
There's wind chimes on that album.
Yeah.
We're all wearing white linen. It's going to be great, guys. Dubs. Yeah.
You've got a stormtrooper on a crucifix. No, it's Darth Vader. No, it's a stormtrooper.
It's a stormtrooper.
A little Riker number. He's one of our friends and collaborators on a few bits and pieces.
Yeah.
That's great, man.
And but I'm starting to really want to spend more time on my own than I ever have in my life.
Yeah.
Growing up, I never spent any time on my own. I lived on my own.
Come from a big, noisy family sort of thing?
Not especially, but like a big family, like a big extended family. But I was always, I've mentioned loads of times, I was always the one knocking on my mate's doors at like 8 o'clock in the morning in school. I was going, all right. And they're like, they're still in bed.
Fuck,
I'm like,
off,
what?
Yeah.
Let's go out. Like, and then when my mates wanted to go in to watch certain films and things like that, I was like, oh, no, I don't. Like,
you can be psychologically driven by that, even not by your own surroundings. And then as you've had a lot of that in the past, the law of diminishing marginal returns, you get less out of that and you start to appreciate more of the things that you don't do as much.
Yeah.
You know? And,
yeah, definitely. I feel that desire to create, like, and, you know, whether that and that's just not necessarily writing songs, which was something I did really enjoy when I was, you know, doing stuff like that. But I will throw myself into all my energies into kind of pursuing ideas and, you know, creative ideas and just looking at avenues to take them. And I think just getting to the point now where you start to exhaust yourself to the point where you realise it is important to also have them few hours where you just think, all right, nah, I've got to say no. I've got to just go, I'm not answering my phone.
When it's specifically like something I do, a trick I pull on myself is that I have like a couple of hours downtime just at home on the sofa or whatever. And I'll fill it with like reading something that is to do with my work or something that's going.
It's very much like that, mate. As well,
it's just relentless, man. Yeah. I just never like. It's never real time off for me. And I think that's where having an interest like for you, UFC or whatever, or I don't know what it would be for me. I got into gardening for a bit.
Yeah.
But I need hobbies, man.
Painting for me.
Is it?
I'll paint miniatures, and there's nothing more rewarding. It I got hold of an airbrush, and the feeling I get of spray painting a miniature with an airbrush, I can't draw a comparison to it, and it is zen for me, and I do get that sort of absolute gratification. I haven't done it for ages, and I keep saying to myself, I've got to paint something because it's driving me crazy. I need to do it. So that's definitely one for me.
Yeah.
But going back to the
is that single point focus thing that we were talking about earlier? It's like you in your fight last week, or when I'm sitting there meditating, focusing on the breath coming in and out of my nose or whatever. It's basically the same principle, isn't it?
Definitely. Yoga. Focusing in. Yoga's a great one for that, I find, for myself and people. Because it is that trance and breathing that comes with the exercise and the present of mind. It's very good. But I find, you said with the sort of being around people, for me that's a big one. Because I can easily get pulled, with a butterfly mind, I can get pulled into rabbit holes, which I really enjoy, don't get me wrong. I love pursuing, like Stu says about pursuing ideas, I like to theoretically pursue ideas all the time. I'm a prolific idea creator in my head. and it's really enjoyable. But also, if I find myself becoming a hermit, what am I doing? And it can bring on depression. Like my lows, we've talked about mental health. My absolute lows, I wasn't seeing hardly anyone. And we were doing a lot of club nights, and I would go to a club night, do a club night where there's lots of people, and then spend a lot of the week at home doing all the bad things, like eat fried chicken all the time, not creating, like even cooking's creation, which is great. It's methodical, it's meditative.
That's so true,
It is, it's like a process. I used to have it, first time I had that, rolling joints, was that whole methodical, calming behaviour that was part of the process. Cooking's now that, and it's nice. But I was doing all the wrong things, and it was solitude, and it was constant solitude. And realising that I'm actually a sociable person. I like to be around people. I don't like using my phone. Stu will constantly have a go at me because I'm terrible on social media. I have a very strange relationship with that handheld device where I really don't like it.
Good on you, mate.
And I like to be around people. It's difficult because it is business. Like we do facilitate our business from it.
Same, yeah.
And
same,
I have an almost allergic reaction to it. And the amount of times you do this, get yourself into habit of doing it. And I can't train a behaviour on it. And it's frustrating. It must be frustrating. It's very frustrating for Stu. But I love being around people. This is the thing that makes me happy.
Yeah, mate.
I certainly feel you on that. And you talking about the music, dude. And we should talk about your most recent album. Because I came to watch it with my girlfriend. And I can't remember the venue that we caught it in. Because I've got a terrible... But I think it might have been the first time that you...
was it at Redon in Bethnal Green?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
It was, dude. That was our really first gig, cool, man. And you know what? I thought the performance of music was great. And another thing that stood out was the people you had around you, your other musicians, and the excitement on their face to be doing that and to be doing that creative thing. It was really nice to see.
Yeah,
it was really good.
Oh man, yeah, and in a, I guess in a sense the new album and the new project is my attempt to like integrate music and the making of music and the rest of my life. So the needs and the ideas and the mental wobbles and all the stuff that composes like my internal and external worlds, trying to get everything into one place finally, I don't know if it's failed or not, but I'm really happy, like musically and lyrically, I'm really, really happy with it. I think it's definitely the best thing I've ever done. And it's just also the most honest thing I've ever done. So it's like connect in a sense that connecting to like friendships, which is about connecting with other humans and talking. The Unmaster, which is the name of the new album, is basically like a really candid account of my own like mental wobbles and like my fears and anxieties and solitudes and how manic I can get, which is very, and so it's kind of like all that presented in an album, which is like mad exhilarating to do in a performance. It's like standing, it's like the first time, I don't know if you guys had this, but I spent, you know, a good amount of time in my sort of teens and 20s trying to be something that I wasn't and like presenting myself as something that I wasn't.
Yeah.
And the moment where you're like, ah, I can actually be present in this room as me, you know, it's like the thing I was talking about the first time I dared to get with a guy.
Yeah.
And then even more so the first time I came out publicly, this album feels like coming out as myself.
Yeah.
Whereas before it was always something of a pretense, you know.
Can you remember the moment when you thought, I'm actually going to do this. I'm actually going to write this sort of record.
I did it. It wasn't really a decision in that way, actually. It just came. I tried to keep making all the time, and I definitely wanted to make an album. I left the band I was in before, Disraeli and the Small Gods, and I was like, right, I'm going to make a solo album. I had this like vague kind of impression of what it would be bubbling in the back of my mind. And then I sort of fell apart and had a bit of a low. And I went to do a lot of therapy and I got into mindfulness and I started getting into men's work as well, like this group therapy thing. And in doing all that, I started doing all this talking about my inside world and also looking been like under the lid, under the bonnet of my mind and self, and seeing how flipping far down it goes, you know, and how much of a tangle and how this is connected to that. And so I guess the album ended up being about that just by default, because that was what my concern was at that time. And so it was inevitable that it was going to start to be about falling apart, because that's what was going on. And then eventually it became about putting yourself back together, because that was what was going on as well. And all the madness in between. So there's a lot of madness in the album itself. You know, there's a lot of really like frantic energy. There's a lot of kind of, I guess there's quite a lot of anxious energy in it in a sense. But then also there's a lot of hopeful energy in it. There's a lot of like, I've always loved music with like big bass lines, music that's quite hectic and dark. I've always like loved jungle, hip hop, grime, all that kind of world. And for me, there's a lot of joy in it. Yeah. Like the feeling, 3 a.m. in a grotty flipping warehouse on the outskirts of Bristol.
Yeah.
You know, the feeling that I had at age 17, nothing to do with all the ecstasy I'd taken. the sense of like pure flipping, like joy in a context that was dark. Do you know what I mean? It's actually like physically dark. There was very little light. The music was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Everyone's like boxing the air. Do you know what I mean? Like, one of their tops off. So I guess it's got, for me, The Unmaster is the first time I've really let that energy through into my music properly. And like, that's a joy as well. It's the first time I've flopped all my shadows out, really. Like, rather than kind of trying to make them something more palatable.
Yeah.
What's coming up?
What's coming up is, when's this going to come out?
Monday.
Days.
What a rapid turnaround.
Not this Monday, the following Monday.
Let me retrieve my poster with all the dates on, because this is very exciting.
And so while you're looking for that, if people haven't checked out your music and they want to, on all the usual places?
All the usual places. Spotify is a great one, obviously. It's got pretty much everything up there. Bandcamp is also a really, really good one to check things out, because it's got all the lyrics on as well. And the lyrics are very, very important to me. So it's disraeli.com. If you click on the music tab, it takes you to my Bandcamp page.
Wicked.
I've also got lovely vinyls up there and CDs and all that goodness. All right. So the big thing to plug is that I'm going on tour around the UK. It's with the new band that you saw, Chris. It's gonna be absolute fire, because every time we do a gig, it's just like, it's ridiculous.
It was a really good energy in that place.
It's just like it's all the stuff we've been talking about, really. It's just like, it's just release, really. And so the gig is about, it's about release. It's about dancing with the shadows and getting your dirt face on and getting down, and also having a think and being in communion with the people around you. For me personally, the experience of doing this gig is like really important and spiritual, and whatever that means. It's called the Unmaster Tour, because that is the name of the album. If this picture will download, I can tell you what the dates are. I'm going to remember them anyway. All right, so we're in Birmingham on the 3rd of December at the Hare and Hounds. We're in Bristol on the 4th of December. We're in Totnes on the 5th. We're in flipping London at Oslo on the 8th. And then we're in Brighton on the 9th. We're in Manchester on the 10th. We are in Glasgow on the 11th and Huddersfield on the 13th.
Fuck, that's some driving.
Yeah.
You can do it.
We can do it.
Please come through. There are some tickets left for almost all of those dates, I think. So please come through and see us.
Amazing. I might come and catch you at Oslo, buddy.
Yes,
I like
please
the venue.
Do. Please do.
Mate, thanks so much.
Yeah. Thank you. It's been a real pleasure. It sorted me out, actually. Enjoy I was that. In a bit of a funny place this morning.
Yeah.
I was, you know, when you wake up, you're like, but I'm all alone. So I was having one of those mornings. And I'm really grateful for the
talk. Oh, man, it's been a great chat, Pooh. Thank you so much for
thank
coming
you.
On.
Thank
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, man. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I've butted in yet again. I just want to quickly tell you about this magazine. It's called Pod Bible. Now, Pod Bible is the new essential guide to podcasts. It's put together alongside Spotify and Acast, and it's a one-stop shop to tell you all about the podcasts you maybe know about, but definitely about a load of the podcasts that you probably don't know about that we think you should know about. I mean, in the first edition, there's interviews with Adam Buxton, interviews with Craig Parkinson, there's features on Jade Adams, and there's just an abundance of information about so many exciting podcasts that are out there. Also, Spotify have given us these amazing little codes. So if you do get a print copy, you can just turn on your Spotify on your phone, scan the little code, and it just automatically opens up the podcast on your listening device. How good's that? If you haven't managed to get a print copy, then just go over to www.podbiblemag.com and read it online, because the digital version is all over there and it's all free. So every other month there'll be a new edition out. So go and have a look and support us on the social medias as well. PodBibleMag.com. It's a drunken soiree in the Within. Chris and Stu present Hardcore Listing, the podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.